Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Pawan Verma to the broadcast. Pawan is the Executive Vice President and Global Chief Information and Technology Officer of Foot Locker, a $7.7 billion revenue footwear retailer with 3,000 stores in 24 countries. As CIO and CTO, Pawan oversees the global information technology functions and infrastructure and provides leadership and vision to align technology with strategic business initiatives. He's also responsible for digital marketing and the customer experience across touchpoints, optimizing the supply chain to meet changing customer expectations, and creating memorable experiences that promote customer loyalty. Prior to joining Foot Locker, Pawan was Vice President of Digital and Marketing Technologies and Services Platforms at Target, and before that was at Verizon Wireless, most recently as Senior Director of Architecture and Product Engineering. Pawan received a Master's of Science degree in Software Engineering and Computer Applications from the Government College of Engineering, Aurangabad, and an MBA in Strategy and Management Information Systems from Kent State University's Graduate School of Management. I recently caught up with Pawan by phone from his office in New York, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as he discussed how the data scientists on his team collaborate with the business, enabling the business to ask the right questions and the data scientists to explore the right hypotheses. And Principle 5, External Partnerships, as Pawan shared how Foot Locker partners with other organizations to create memorable experiences for their customers that drive loyalty. We also discussed the importance of customer journey mapping, data analytics, Pawan's diverse responsibilities, which include several customer-facing roles, among other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal. TopTal helps organizations achieve the world-class skill, execution speed, and agility they need to win in an environment of increasing innovation and competition, especially in the realm of talent. Blockchain is a topic of increasing relevance to companies, and chief information officers need to develop a talent pipeline to help implement a blockchain strategy. I recently caught up with TopTal's CEO, Tasso Duval, who offered his top five thoughts on obtaining blockchain talent.
First, when hiring blockchain talent, don't focus too much on specific experience, especially since the tools of the trade are changing rapidly. Instead, hire people with a strong baseline knowledge of development and who have experience with cryptography or distributed systems. Second, look for developers who are enthusiastic about the technology. That enthusiasm will provide motivation for them to stay up to date on best practices and innovations in technology. Third, focus on quality of previous development work and attention to detail. Faulty development work can cost a lot in the long term, especially with blockchain implementations. Fourth, ensure you're peer reviewing the talent that comes into the network or that comes into your organization through other experts so that you're ensuring their blockchain knowledge is up to speed with your expectations. And fifth, ensure that when you're providing a management framework for the developer to work within, it's one that considers blockchain at its core, ensuring that the developer is not only working with best software practices, but also best blockchain practices is very important.
Pawan Verma, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Peter. Delighted to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
I've been looking forward to it myself, so thank you. Well, Pawan, I thought we would begin with your role. You are the Global Chief Information Officer and Technology Officer at Foot Locker. And maybe you can, Foot Locker is certainly a brand that most people who would be listening to this would recognize, but I wonder if in your own words you can give an overview of Foot Locker's business.
We are a global brand. We do business and engage with the customer in North America, as well as in Europe and a part of Australia and New Zealand. All in, we are 3,000 plus physical store footprint and a pretty sizable dot com engagement from our consumer as well. You know, we are primarily into athletic footwear and apparel business. But more importantly, I think we are truly into engagement and experience business, the way I describe it. I think the youth that we connect with, the youth that we are engaging either digitally or physically, is really very interested to know about the new sneaker that is coming. The sneakers are not only for them the status symbol or you know, a currency for that, but also they use these means of engagement via sneaker to get to the concerts, to different events. So the product that we sell are not only used at the court, but there are a lot of products that we sell are used off court as well as a lifestyle product. We are right around 7.8 billion in revenue, and a pretty you know, diverse group of portfolio of products. Our consumer is engaging with us in many different means. I think for us, we really do not look at which channel a consumer try to engage with us. We truly believe in listening to them more than telling to them. I think we are here to create that emotional engagement experience in what I call a phygital world. Phygital intentionally, as in how you start to create the customer journey, start the customer journey in mobile, and morph that into a store, and then go back to the desktop or iPad, and then the other way around. I think we want to be part of that customer journey. We want to be want to add value in that customer journey. We want to add you know, whichever way we can help our consumer in that consumer journey. This kid that we are servicing to happens to have very high mobile penetration. So they're somewhere between 85 to 90% connected with us mobily. They connect with us for our launch experiences. And it's very high energy culture around social, digital, physical, and that's why I use the term phygital, which combines all of those experiences. And our goal is really to be center of that engagement. Our goal is really to cater to that energy that they're creating and be part of that.
Speaking of diversity, which you mentioned a moment ago, you have quite a diverse role. As I mentioned, your title is Executive Vice President and Global Chief Information and Technology Officer. But as you peel back the onion, as you and I've had a chance to do before, I was amazed by the number of responsibilities you have. Can you give a brief overview of the all that is entailed by your role?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking. I'm really, really humbled to serve the organization. And I think what the leaders that the team that I serve, so they are primarily four key functions, but they are all intertwined and they all have a connected tissue. The first big function of for my team that I lead is really the global technology team. So they're focused on the core POS system, the .com system, the infrastructure, really the mobile piece, the pieces that a typical a CTO, CIO function will have: application development, operations, handling of the end user support. The second big part of my function is really creating that customer experience across all the different touch points in form of data, form of digital marketing. So all the digital marketing function and the marketing function around the performance marketing, mobile marketing, how we activate or create demand, the SEO, SEM function. And the reason I think we combine the data marketing, some of those function under my leadership, is because I truly believe that we need to really create this platform wherein our consumer can come and engage with us. And that engagement can only be enriched if you're activating any given marketing message based on what the customer is looking for. Listening to those signals and then connecting that. So that is the second big part of my role, connecting really the data science and all the data piece, as well as the marketing function around performance marketing, SEO, SEM, the content function, all the creative digital asset management function. That's the second big part of my role. The third is Supply chain. Supply chain is a big part of digital. The supply chain is not only around how fast we can provide the service to our customer and how convenient it is, but it is also how engaging it is. Today's customer, especially our consumer, is looking for speed, but they're also looking for surprise and delight moments. So I truly believe that supply chain is another function that has to be catered, because the needs of a customer, there are consumers, those who want unique unboxing, unboxing experience. There are consumers, those who want product to be delivered in certain ways. Some want product to be delivered next day. Some want product to be delivered in the timeline that they have when they're gifting somebody. So I think supply chain is another, the digital supply chain is another part of, and that's also a global function, a pretty robust and running $7+ or almost $8 billion business. Supply chain is pretty interesting role. And the last function under my leadership, or the team that I get to serve, is the CX, the all the customer experience and connectivity, on how we connect with our customer around loyalty, how we create these loyalty experiences are those that are really memorable. How we are really not thinking about just about you spend this much and you get this much. How we elevate that beyond that and start to capture the engagement and the clicks and the likes and things like that. And then really trying to weave that into our store associate, because consistency of the experience when you engage with us to explore, to discover, consistency of experience when you start to transact with us, consistency of experience when you come to return with us, has to be very consistent and very authentic. And I think this is how all these things weaves in. And that's when we start to create measurement like NPS and lifetime value of customer and things like that. So those are the four big buckets of the function. We are multi-branded retailer, so our team really service all brands. So not only Foot Locker, but East Bay, Lady Foot Locker, Kids Foot Locker, Foot Action, 602, so Champs Sports, all the key brands that we have, we service all of them. My team is providing service across the globe for all of those brands.
Remarkable breadth to your set of responsibilities, Pawan. Thank you for that overview. You mentioned earlier, one of the things I think is so interesting about this is there are a lot of, if I can even call them peers now, as CIOs, again, that's a limiting term for what you do, of course. One of the things that is a differentiator, I think, for those who expand their responsibilities versus those who have maybe the more traditional, shall we say, CIO roles, is that customer touch point. And it's interesting, as you were walking through each of the layers of your responsibilities, how much of a profound impact and touch point you do have with the consumers of Foot Locker. And it's interesting to hear you talk about that experience in your first response as to how the company engages with customers, that multi-channel, some might say omni-channel approach, listening more to the desires of the consumer as opposed to dictating to them. You spoke also of customer journeys. Can you talk a little bit about the methods that you use in order to do that listening, in order to do that mapping of different kinds of customer journeys, and then use that as to develop insights as to how the organization might plot its own opportunities?
That's really, really good question. And we are in early stages of some mapping some of those journey. But I think they are, I would say, not only mapping, maturing. I think we do a really good job of servicing our customer, but we certainly have one of the things which is changing, Peter, is our consumer, and not only our, you can say for other brands as well, the consumer is moving very fast. We are actually really blessed to have the youth consumer who's getting these trends early on and then trying to adopt that. The way I would say our mantra for customer journey is activate the strong signal and amplify and elevate the weak signal. And what I mean by that is, there are times when customer is coming and explicitly are telling us that this is what they want. And in that case, we just need to activate on those strong signals. That is easier part. The second part is when you have multiple weak signal that you are hearing from customer, you're listening from customer, how do you activate or amplify those signal? Not every weak signal has to be amplified, but maybe one weak signal will become strong down the line, but how you're paying attention to that. And that journey mapping is based on certainly the common path most consumer will take, but that is also based on gathering the data via their social feed, gathering the data through the launch experiences. We have a sizable launch business wherein we are launching really iconic, amazing sneakers on a very regular basis, working with our brand partners like Nike and Adidas and others. And in those experiences, there are a lot of breadcrumbs that our consumer is leaving, and we need to pay attention to those. We need to amplify those and start to weave in the journey and be part of that journey. I will go the third point is the customer journey not only has to lead to a transaction. The mindset that we are changing is really how we become part of the journey. Day one, it may not lead to transaction, but someday it will lead to transaction, end of the day. But how do we create that platform that they can engage, and how we create the customer journey and journeys, because not two customers are same, and that how we really personalize them. So it could be the same product in the customer journey that we are connecting with a consumer A differently than consumer B, because the stories and the narration of that story, the narration of those content, the two customer could react very differently, even though the product may be same.
You've also are passionate about analytics, I know. In a conversation you and I recently had, you mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing you here, I hope fairly closely though, the data is dumb, but the decisions you need to make require the synthesis of that data, that you need to, you know, to build those capabilities and this and the tools and algorithms in order to really advance data analytics to make better decisions more rapidly. And I wonder, what are some of the methods that you have used? You know, if you were to whisper in the ear of a colleague who's a CIO who is a few rungs below you, what are some of the practices you've seen work particularly well in establishing a better path towards data analytics and driving better decisions?
I think the three things I would say in this journey, and yeah, I'm very, very passionate about, I think I'm technologist at heart, and I think data is one of the things that, and I actually go one step back. I don't think data is something that we've started to use to make the decision today, we as an industry or other industry. I think what has really happened in last 2-3 years is the compute power and the cycle to do testing on based on data has increased, and because of which data is certainly taking a prime stage. So the two factor, because of data and then machine learning and then AI is really coming into the forefront, is because amount of data that we are generating, that is the order of magnitude higher than what we did last year or what we did yesterday. And the second is the compute power, because you could not crunch all the data and find some hypothesis that quickly in the past. Now, because of the compute power becoming cheaper and faster, you can do that. So that's just the foundation. To your original question, what has been a path that can directionally lead to a success? I don't think there is one path that would work for everybody, but the what has worked for us is really one, a focus, making sure that the data product, that data initiative that you're working on, this is such a quote-unquote sexy area that everybody tries to put emphasis on or shiny object that everybody's trying to invest on. But if you start to do peanut butter spread, you're not using the power of data. You're not using the power of algorithm. So having a clear focus is what problem you're trying to solve is really, really the key. The second is engaging with business, engaging with your partners, engaging. I don't think the companies where you have a successful data practice works when the data team is a geeky team and you hire a bunch of data scientists. They're very, very critical role. But if you don't have a pull and a push, as in the collaboration between the business team who is trying to ask the right question and a data team who's trying to give them hypothesis, and then the power of the two working together. If you are only working on a hypothesis, it becomes a hobby project that you continue to push. And if there is no pull from business, so it's the balance between pull and a push. You need to partner with them so they can elevate their thinking, but equally you need to solve the real world problem. So the first is the focus, second is alignment. And third, I would say is creating the hypothesis that can create action, not just an action that you can start to measure. And if it is not working, that's also a measurement that it is not working, and you move on to the next hypothesis. But creating a dashboard or creating the algorithm that doesn't lead to a actionable outcome is not a good algorithm in my mind. I always use the analogy that, in our cars, we always have many in the dashboard. We have many different signs. There's a sign that shows how heated the engine is, and there is a gauge that shows whether my car is running less on fuel. I'm sure you and I we pay more attention because of the maturity of the cars these days, on the engines these days, that we pay more attention to the fuel sign than the engine sign, because likelihood of your engine getting warmed up so rapidly, that happens maybe quite rarely because of how we have matured that engine. You can take immediate action if you're running out of fuel. Likewise, you pay more attention to your speedometer than you pay attention to how much RPM your car is giving. So it's really, I'm highlighting the metaphor that you always need to look at the vector that is yielding action. Because if you have a lot of gizmos on your dashboard, which is not helping you make decisions, they are great, but they are not helping you make decisions.
Very interesting insights. Another thing you alluded to briefly that I wanted to dive into in a little bit more detail, Pawan, is the whole topic of loyalty. I think a lot of people, when they think about loyalty programs, they think about points, whether it's miles with the airlines we travel with, points for stays in hotels, etc., to take a couple of prominent examples. You've been thinking about that in a bit of a nuanced way, as the way in which as a brand, you can develop loyalty among your customer set. Can you talk a little bit further about the methods you've used?
Yeah, I think the way we see is there are really three key foundation of this program that for us. One is how do we engaging in earning. Second is ways of redeeming. And third is making it fresh. So it's engage and earn. The second is redeem. And third is the freshness, and let me double click on each one of those. So the first is the way of engaging and earning doesn't have to be only based on how much you have spent and how we can if you spend $100, you get $5 off, and that comes in the form of coupon, and you get the physical coupon, and the engagement experience is not ideal. I think we are looking at ways as we are reimagining our loyalty, and I think it is coming to fruition and further enhancing. It's not that we don't have a loyalty program. We have a great loyalty program, but we are certainly upping it much further. So the ways of the earning is certainly based on the monetary, how much you have spent, but it goes beyond that. It goes beyond how we start to capture the engagement. So if you have liked us on Facebook, and after so many likes for one particular product, if you have engaged with us on other social platforms, if you blog about us, if you write reviews about us, so it's not one thing. And I'm a huge believer of localization. I think the communities and our customer is really much more connected. Our consumer, I always believe that they are the community tribe. And you need to provide that kind of a local nuance. So if we are doing some specific launch in Santa Monica, that has to be catered to what works for that local customer, what is important to the folks in that greater LA area or that market. That has to be elevated, and they should feel pride of that. And that pride should earn them differently than just the point. So there are many different ways, just to give that one example. Redeeming doesn't have to be all based on that if you have these many points, it will get converted to these many dollars. Yep, that's absolutely the one way. But other is that you can redeem those points in experiences. So we today provide in some of our stores, and we'll continue to enhance. And sometime we have the pop-up store where we do this shoe cleaning services. Because if you're running on the sneaker and they become not, there are many services that we can, or a consumer that we can engage in the platform, and the redeeming way doesn't have to be monetary. I'm not saying that we're going away from monetary. The choice is customers. We are not telling them. We are listening and let them decide what they want to do. If we want to pick up top 100 of our customer and they want to have the experience at NBA All-Star game differently, sure, we will have that as one of the option to redeem. I'm just giving that an example. And the last one is freshness. Everything that I just shared with you, this is the youth that we are catering to. So how do we make sure that this continues to get evolved? If there are new paradigm coming, if our consumer is getting engaged with Pokemon Go, how we can gamify that experience for them? How can we be part of that journey? So if you create a program and if you think that the life of that program is or the rules will be 10 years, I think we are mistaken. The life of those platform is certainly much more longer, but the way you can earn, the way you can redeem, and the way you can continue to be fresh, that has to get looked at every so often and has to be much more localized, because what works in New York, which is one of our major market, may or may not work or may have to get augmented in Milan or in Paris or London. And those are the markets that we get to serve our customer as well.
Pawan, I'm also thinking that you mentioned some of the internal responsibilities you have, some of the more traditional IT responsibilities. You mentioned supply chain is another one, for example. And so we've been talking a lot about the external facing portions of your function. It would strike me as it must be advantageous to have this kind of bird's eye view across such a vast portion of all the digital conversation, to be able to see the kind of cradle to grave processes, the way in which the supply chain enables all that you are describing, that is improvements to the supply chain, enable all that you are describing in terms of the customer experience or what they can purchase and when and where, on their terms, as you say. And so I wonder if you could take a moment just to talk about that, the advantage of that breadth of responsibilities to include both internal and external facing responsibilities.
No, I think this is really I'm so humbled that I get to serve the customer in across the journey. And when I say across the journey, not only when they are discovering and engaging the functions around data and marketing and loyalty, when they are transacting around POS and .com and mobile, and then the later part is how we service them. I will use the metaphor always that when you go to a restaurant, ambiance is great and the menu is rich and the food quality is great, but the service is bad. You will remember that. You need to make sure that the service also, the promptness of service and how you get service is good as well, because you can't just do all that in the front end and waiting for 2 hours for your order to come and then waiting for water to come. So that's why the connectedness of supply chain, the connectedness of call center, connectedness of our customer experience team when they call is really, really the key. So we are working to certainly elevate that. We are working to see how when the customer is picking the product, how that experience can be in the store, how we can further connect the inventory across the all the nodes of the network. I mean, we have, as I said, we are really, really blessed to have an amazing portfolio of a store where our consumer wants to engage with us, and really great portfolio of our digital business as well. We don't see them as two businesses. In my eyes, I see them, I get to serve the customer. I need to surprise and delight at service. So the creating the narrative around common inventory, as in making sure that if customer is looking for a product in our physical touch point or mobile touch point or store touch point, making sure that that product, if we have that anywhere in the fleet, we make them available to them. And if they're ordering online, picking up from store, we enable them on their terms. So major initiative just to make sure then the inventory accuracy, the initiatives such as RFID certainly helps that we are just embarking on that journey to journey in our European operation to start to implement RFID. That certainly increases the inventory accuracy. In turn, it increases the speed that we can service to our customer. In turn, it makes the product available. Huge benefits, huge operational and customer service benefits. We are putting much deeper speech analytics in our call center business. So by that way, we know why consumers are calling and how we can service them. We are in process of experimenting a more what I call mini hub, and we talked about that in a couple of our other public calls as well. The CEO has talked about it. The mini hub is really how do we service? Can we put not the really really big box DC and really the warehouse in every major geos? So in US, for discussion's sake, if we have 10 or 15 major market, can we put a more extended back room in one area that can service that local market from .com, mobile, or from store perspective as well? So rather than going to the centralized 2-3 DCs that we have, it can service from that as well. So we are experimenting that. I think it really comes down to, are you listening to your customer and not two customers the same, and are you providing the experience in terms of service that they're looking for? A simpler thing as in providing visibility to where the package is every step of the way. I mean, those are some of the initiatives, those are the forefront of our mind. The way I would say is, you know, we need to win the game of convenience, but we need to win the game with convenience when we can provide much richer emotional and engaging experience. And how do we bring, that experience and convenience both together?
That's really great. Well, you mentioned a short while ago that you are a techie at heart. I wonder, and we've covered a number of technology trends that are rising, business analytics, artificial intelligence, et cetera. I wonder, as you look to the future, what are some other trends that particularly excite you that are beginning to make their way onto your roadmap?
I think the order of, not in any particular order, but I think artificial intelligence is one of the trend in many different facets, not as a big shiny word, but in many different facets, certainly is going to take a prime stage in my mind. And the reason I say that is because the data is growing in every organization. Every organization is, we all are a part of helping that, creating more and more data. Once data foundation is done, you can start to do deep learning, machine learning, and then start to really, really augment the human behavior with augment that with machine behavior. I always have believed that there is something to be said about the combining art and science together, and the AI really starts to do that. It starts to combine the art and the science, whether it comes in the form of AI in form of visual search, image search, or complete AI as robotics working into the supply chain and 100% automation of supply chain. I think there are many facets, and this is one area I think will continue to get more and more elevated. The second area in my mind is blockchain. Blockchain in my mind will become a very, very, very prime as well, just because the visibility. I mean, just think about a diamond merchant trying to see the accuracy, whether the stone is good or bad, and it's coming from, you're selling that in Seattle, but it's coming from a different part of the world, and you just need to make sure, and you just put a IoT device within the stone or somewhere around it. You can track that all the way, and it just gives you the deeper visibility, deeper accuracy. It starts to automate some of the process. So I think blockchain is another one that I see some of. It is in certain industry right now. I certainly think that it will come and become much more prime time. And third, which I put in the category of experiential. I don't want to say retail, experiential platform. There are many experiential platforms, whether that is coming in form of AR or VR or mixed reality. I think it's more AR in my mind and mixed than VR, the way it is going, yet to be seen. How do you create those experiences? How do you create those surprise and delight moments? So the experiential retail, the retail that is, or the platform that can do more of a engagement based on just text messages, that you like something, you put that into the brand text and you do the buying based on the collaborative commerce. So the collaborative commerce certainly is something will be enhanced with the experiential platform. So those are the three core from consumer perspective. I'll give you the fourth one, which is much more foundational. The speed in which the bandwidth and network and compute is changing. The platform speed. I mean, we are about to have 5G in North America and other part of the world. That's certainly going to further increase the compute power. That's going to further increase the bandwidth level, adoption of cloud. So I think the other three that that I shared in terms of experience side of AI or blockchain or the collaborative commerce, I think they all will come and can only be lit up if we have the core foundation of bandwidth and compute. And I think the cloud and 5G certainly will enable it even further.
A great list, certainly. Well, Pawan Verma, thank you so much for joining us today on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
I really appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Stephen Gillette, the CEO of the Alphabet company, Chronicle.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll structure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering role well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations have. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website.